Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, it's fine. The only problem you're going to discover is that I haven't got anything to say. That won't keep me from talking.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 325, Sentiment and Manipulation. One of the lovely perks of my job is that I get to meet fascinating, accomplished folks all around the world who frequently become friends. One such friend is Bob Mondello, the film critic at National Public Radio, whose voice you may recognize from his movie reviews on All Things Considered. And even though last week was the build-up to last night's Academy Awards, and therefore the busiest time of the year for a film critic, Bob agreed to have a Skype chat with me to help me understand the sometimes emotional responses we have to art and why we react the way we do.
I have long wanted to talk to you about S&M, Bob Mondello. and by that, of course, I mean sentiment and manipulation. The reason this all came up in my head is that I couldn't see the finale of Downton Abbey the other night because I had to go drop off my daughter at a thing, and I had to hang out for 2 hours, and in the mall next door, they were showing the movie Quartet, written by Ronald Harwood, starring Tom Courtney. It's not as good as The Dresser, their previous collaboration.
Oh, well, as a work of art, you mean? It's a nice little movie.
It is definitely a nice little movie, but it wasn't as transporting or, I thought, as compelling, I guess.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. So a friend of mine said, oh, I'm worried. I don't want to see that movie because it looks overly sentimental. And I think for my money, it could have been more sentimental. But then that same friend on the same night started going insane, crazy about the finale of Downton Abbey.
Which is plenty sentimental.
Hugely sentimental.
Yeah, I suspect your friend is using the word sentimental to mean maudlin. And regards melodrama, which sometimes is maudlin, as something less sentimental because it isn't going for tears all the time.
Right.
That would be my guess.
Right. Well, and I guess that was maybe, you know, I guess I was able to honestly say that Quartet wasn't that sentimental because I thought it could have gone for tears in many instances and didn't.
Yeah, I think as I approach the elderly point of that those folks are already have already reached, I think I'm feeling less and less that the problems of the elderly are being sentimentalized. When I see a movie, for instance, when I see a movie like Amour is about an elderly couple who are approaching the end of life, approaching very rapidly the end of life. And it is anything but sentimental. It is the opposite of sentimental. But the early passages in it will just break your heart.
Yeah.
This woman has a stroke early on and starts having, you know, other physical problems. And it's hard not to be moved by what's happening to her. On the other hand, where it goes ultimately is kind of bracing and direct and not sentimentalized.
So it's like, it's exactly like the Pixar movie Up.
Precisely.
That's right. The first 5 minutes break your heart and then it's all sort of downhill or uphill from there.
That's fair. The opening to Up is absolutely sentimental and it's very sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, and sentimental in a way that everybody kind of likes, I guess, right? I mean,
yes.
It's a good starting point as long as you're then going to get funny.
Well, yes, exactly. And that was the thing that surprised me about my friend's response, is that to a certain degree, I find many things sentimental, whether they are meant to be or not. And of course, one man's sentiment is another man's hogwash or something. But for instance, in the Downton Abbey finale, there was a shocking death at the end of it. But that was hardly sentimental.
Wait a minute. It was preceded by 10 minutes of sentiment.
Yes.
Right? I mean, yes. where it was just so obnoxiously lovey-dovey that you thought, oh my God, no good could come of this.
Right.
This is, after all, a soap opera, right?
Right, yes, it is.
And if things seem to be going too well, you know to be worried.
Yes, exactly. Well, and yet that wasn't moving to me. The thing that honestly got me the most moved was when Carson, the butler, picked up the baby and started walking around the house with it. Yeah, I found that terribly moving.
You are such a dad.
I am a dad. Well, this is the thing. Yes, we are moved. People are moved by different things. When I see the movie or any terrible production of Music Man, and Opie starts to sing "Oh Ho the Wells Fargo Wagon,"
say this. Oh.
Forget it. And that is hugely sentimental. Now, this is the other part of the question. It's also manipulative because they want you to cry in these cases, but all art is manipulative, isn't it? I mean, all art wants you to have some sort of reaction.
Yeah, I think all art is manipulative. Whereas, manipulative. Let me think about that. Artists are trying to get a reaction from you, but by the same I'm stumbling here because. I'm wondering if you can also say that all art is sentimental, and I guess you can't really. There's some kinds of art that are not. Brecht went out of his way not to be sentimental.
Right. Right.
So sometimes they have things that are artists do things that are designed not to engage the emotions precisely. Precisely those things are the things that I get most moved by because the perfection of line, for instance, in a Mondrian painting strikes me as profound, and that you can, in ways that a really gorgeous portrait, I guess it could too. But you hear what I'm saying. It's not about the sentiment of the painting. It's not in an abstraction. You're not being moved necessarily, and especially in a Mondrian.
Well, that's an interesting thing that, I mean, you could say that Brecht was being manipulative. He was trying to manipulate you away from an emotional response and then more into an intellectual response.
Right.
And yet the line of a Mondrian, he's not going, oh, this is going to blow some people's minds when I do this exquisite line like this. He's just painting. Or is he? I mean, I don't know much about fine art.
Well, I think it's fair to say that artists are trying to manipulate your emotions, that they are trying to manipulate you and to get a specific response from you, to interpret the world in a way that interprets, right, so that you are responding to something in a way that you might not if you just saw something in the natural world, right?
Right, right.
So I guess, yes, there it's always art is always going to be trying to manipulate you. I'm not sure that's terribly profound. Advertising is always going to be trying to manipulate you too.
But this is, I think you're absolutely right. But I think that's sometimes I think we expect too much from perhaps arts like the movies or theater or television.
All commercial attractions are going to be sentimental. All commercial attractions, right? I mean, if what you're trying to do is sell tickets, then it's going to be a sentimental version of reality.
Right.
Okay. I mean, and that's why I think Amour is a really interesting example, because it doesn't sentimentalize the process of death and dying at all.
Yeah.
And it, if you look at the box office receipts, it is the one picture that is nominated for Best Picture this year that has not made very much money. And I think that's a commercial attraction like let's say even something like Argo or Zero Dark 30, those pictures make you use music and all kinds of other things to manipulate your emotions in a way that is satisfying in some way at the end. I think Zero Dark Thirty is a really interesting work because it doesn't go for the sentimental ending. I was terrified that, that movie was going to be a rah-rah, go-get-the-bad-guy picture. Mm-hmm. And it ended up not being at all, which makes it far more interesting and moving because you get engaged in the struggle of the woman at its center, played by Jessica Chastain. But there is some sentiment to that, too.
Well, yes, that appeal that kind of thing is sentiment appeals to the sentiments of a certain audience, and a more, I don't know, jingoistic rah rah thing like you're talking about would appeal to a larger, or not a larger, but a different.
A larger well, crowd. Yes. I mean, a much larger crowd, an enormously larger crowd. And for as an example, just look at how Argo is doing. Right. Argo is the rah rah go get the guys away from the bad guys picture,
yes.
And it's enormously cheering, and the audience, as a result, cheers.
Hi, I'm Chris Rawson, Chairman of the American Theatre Critics Association, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Next month, we return with performances of The Complete World of Sports Abridged in Scottsdale, Arizona and Moorhead, Minnesota. And then in April, we begin our 12-week tour of Great Britain with the return of the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged Revised, followed by our return to London, where we'll be performing at a brand new venue, the Leicester Square Theater. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe, and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information.
One of the very first Disney movies I ever saw when I was like five was Cinderella. Mm. And at the end of it, my mother, we came out of the theater, and you remember at the end there are two little fairies, fairy godmothers, and they are, one is turning her dress pink and the other one is turning it blue.
Mm. Right? Yes, and right, they're fighting.
And they're just going back and forth and back and forth as she's dancing the thing. And it was just, it's lovely and it's funny. And my mother dissolved in tears.
Oh.
And I looked at her and I said, Mom, it's happy. And she said, I know, it's so happy it made me cry. Well, that, it strikes me, is sentiment and manipulation in its purest forms, right?
Yeah.
And I understand both responses, that it's happy and it makes you feel good to the point that you cry.
Yeah.
Right? And I just think that's sort of definitive.
I think that you're right. That does seem definitive. And I guess the reason that I wanted to have this conversation is because I think down it my gut I have a knee jerk reaction to the idea of sentiment being a criticism, an automatic criticism.
So that's so sentimental. Why would anybody want to see that?
Well, exactly. Yes, that seems more about taste than a useful criticism. I guess maybe is my point. Because do you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so. But that's the description of something as sentimental. What they're talking about is easy sentiment.
Yes.
Something that is predictable and that nudges you in the direction that you've been nudged all your life by people who are well-meaning and who think that you ought to have certain responses to things. And when you're manipulated in that way, it's annoying. Right.
Yes.
What you want, on the other hand, is sentiment that is a little trickier, that catches you unawares. That's the ideal situation, is to be surprised by something into feeling.
Well, yes,
That doesn't make it any less sentimental. It just means that you were surprised by it.
Well, you're right. And if the ending of Zero Dark Thirty had been rah-rah jingoistic, you know, it might have been more popular, but the people who prefer it the way it is would have all rolled their eyes and went, oh, please. That's so blatantly over-the-top manipulative.
Right, and dishonest. It ought to be the fear with manipulation. I don't think people mind being manipulated. They don't want it to be too obvious. They don't want to to succumb to something that is so obvious that they feel like suckers for having right. succumbed. But I think people like the feeling of being pushed in a direction by, say, a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So for which reason we go to pictures that are essentially the same movie, whether they star Transformers or boy wizards or
right.
you know, or vampires. I mean, they essentially go in the same direction. They hit the same marks as they go.
Right.
And we like that as long as there's enough of a surprise and it feels a little different.
Right.
I can tell you that as a critic, when you see 200 movies a year, that they get the tropes get old.
Yes.
Right. And that you feel like you've seen them over and over again, and you start getting there too soon, at which point the picture isn't terribly entertaining. But some pictures still manage to surprise you. And you know, a lot of the ones that are up for Best Picture this year were surprising one way or the other. I mean, listen, there is no more Cinderella story than Silver Linings Playbook, right? I mean, it is absolutely the Cinderella story, even to the point that she loses a slipper as she's leaving the ball.
Yes, that's right.
But it's surprising in its particulars as you're getting there.
Yes.
And I think that for that reason, audiences were perfectly happy to be manipulated and to feel sentimentally towards this couple.
Yes. It's not,
It doesn't feel like a terribly honest ending to me, but it's I was certainly glad they got there.
Right. Are there tropes that you, even as a critic who sees 200 movies a year, are there tropes that you are just a sucker for that get you every time?
Yeah. I mean, you can knock me out with a story about a father and son who don't get each other,
mm-hmm.
Partly because for the last 6 years of his life, my father and I couldn't connect in the way that I wanted to. He had Parkinson's, and he was distant in a way that was very sad for me.
Mm.
So that kind of story can really get to me. There are lots of things. I mean, listen, I was the guy who sobbed over Old Yeller a zillion years ago, and who still can't see a picture with a dog without, you know, coming apart. And I resent the fact that it's so easy to do this to me. I do remember seeing, what was it, Turner and Hooch?
Sure.
The Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
And we had just gotten a puppy. And I spent the entire picture just wanting to go oozy 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 to the dog, and it, you know, like feeling like an idiot, and you know, like how in heaven's name do you review something when your primary reaction is this sort of primal one? But what do you do?
But there you are. No, I know. Well, now we're recording this on Tuesday, February 19th, but I won't post this until Monday, which means that last night were the Oscars, or in fact, 5 nights from now are the Oscars. How much will sentiment play into what will win Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Director?
I think sentiment's going to play into it in an odd sort of way. I think one of the best things that ever happened to Argo was that Ben Affleck was not nominated for Best Director.
Yeah.
And you'll notice that ever since he was not nominated for Best Director by the Oscars, he's won every director's prize out there.
Yeah,
everybody's been giving it to him, and it's a reaction that says basically, well, he's not so terrible. Why didn't they think he was worthy of at least giving it? Let's give it to him,
right?
And I think as a practical matter, what's going to happen? You can't give him the director's nod at the Oscars, but you can give him Best Picture, which is the way of saying, well, he did the best directing,
right?
So they'll do that, and they'll give Steven Spielberg the Best Director's nod.
That is certainly my prediction as well. So,
that's what I think is going to happen, and I think that's a sentimental reaction.
Yeah, interesting.
I don't think, however, that we have been manipulated into it. I think it was accidental.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your sentimental favorites via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans on our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, master manipulator Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Kendall Edwards. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Christopher Rawson, and thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 325/975 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
I hope there's enough there that you can actually edit it down into something coherent.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.